Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spingola Zone. It is Monday, May 19th, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. This weekly radio program is sponsored by the American Free Press, whose website is AmericanFreePress.net. And also appreciate if you'd visit the Barnes Review, whose website is BarnesReview.org. Please visit both websites and support the efforts of the people who report accurate history and contemporary events. My websites are Spingola.com and SpingolaSpeaks.wordpress.com. We will be taking calls and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@Spingola.com, and from the chat room, Spingola.chatango.com. You may also call in with questions at 347-215-7292. My guests today are Friedrich Paul Berg and Eric Hunt. Friedrich's website is NaziGassings.com. Eric's website is GasChamberHoax.com. Eric is the creator of The Last Days of the Big Lie, which came out in 2011. He is also the producer, he's actually the creator of the Jewish Gas Chamber Hoax, which came out in March. And now he has a brand new film, and it is entitled The Treblinka Archaeology Hoax. This past Sunday, Elie Wiesel said, "The world has not yet learned enough from the Holocaust, but it will do so in time." He was speaking to Israeli journalists sitting in the cellar of his childhood home in Sighet, Romania, by Skype from his current home in New York City. He said that the world is still grappling with understanding how such a tragedy as the Holocaust could occur in civilized Europe. His talk was part of a ceremony marking the opening of the Holocaust Cellar, the first Shoah education center in Romania, which was launched on Sunday in Sighet. The cellar will be a new feature of the Holocaust Museum in Wiesel's former home in the courtyard of the old Jewish ghetto and will serve as a place of study dedicated to the 13,000 local Holocaust victims. Chris, welcome to the program. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hello, Deanna. Hi.
Hi, thanks.
It's good to be here.
Well, thank you for joining me. I can't believe that all of these museums are opening up, all these Holocaust survivors are coming forth. I mean, there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of survivors, and they keep speaking. Oh, my goodness. How can there be so many survivors when so many were killed?
Well, it's possible because they never were killed to begin with. If you were killed in a gas chamber, you're not likely to be up and around 70 years later.
Collecting money.
So every quote Holocaust survivor today, they have to make up these wild stories because for the existing narrative to be supported, you have to believe that they are next in line to be gassed. So you'll hear these stories about how they stood up tall to pass selection, or they hid behind someone to pass selection. You know, they were next in line for that gas chamber, but that's if you believe their stories.
Exactly.
And the stories are all inherently absurd. The reason they survived is fairly simple. It's almost obvious, but people are, of course, so brainwashed that they really can't think of the obvious. The reason they survived is because the Nazis kept them alive. The Nazis fed them. The Nazis gave them clean, lice-free clothing. The Germans gave them shelter against the bitter cold in the winter and the extreme heat in the summer. The Nazis kept all of these people alive. If the Nazis had wanted to kill any of them, they certainly would have been able to do it. But we're given this totally insane story that these Jews resisted against these fiendish Nazis trying to kill them. And these Jews survived because of some mysterious things happening. God was on their side, or their group solidarity saved them, or worshiping God and Yahweh somehow protected them from the fiendish Nazis. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Fritz, water came down instead of the gas.
Right.
Can you imagine? What? That is unbelievable that water would come out of a shower head.
Yeah.
How do showers work? It's so confusing to these people.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe... Well, I did believe all this nonsense when I was a kid, as most of us did, because that's what we heard in school. That's what we heard through the movies and television and books and all kinds of so-called documentaries on the Hitler Channel. And so what else could we think but to believe all this?
It's hell on earth. They wanted you to believe in hell, this hell on earth, Auschwitz, hell on earth, Treblinka, hell on earth. And people have to believe in this hell on earth to be supporting these other terrible tragedies that are occurring as a result of the use of this Holocaust narrative. I'm sorry, Fritz.
Well, no, that's all right. I was thinking of one crazy part of the story, the so-called death marches from the concentration camps. One has the impression, and it's, you know, no accident, that when the when Auschwitz was evacuated or abandoned because the Russians were there, then the program changed so that the Jews were killed off by marching them to death, as if the Germans had to figure out some new fiendish way to kill the Jews. So they would march them in the cold, in the winter, for hundreds of miles, and kill them off by fatigue and marching.
Yeah,
it's insane. It's totally insane. But it's also obscene, because what the Germans really were doing was trying to keep these people alive and healthy as best they possibly could under what were almost impossible circumstances. On the death marches, so-called death marches, the real killers were the Allied bombers and fighter planes and fighter bombers that would come down on these refugee convoys or treks on lonely, isolated roads and just strafe the hell out of them, kill as many refugees as they possibly could, including many Jews. And that part of the Holocaust hoax is not talked about very much, but that's the reality. In Dachau, for example, when the Americans took over there, they found an entire train next to the camp that had perhaps 1,000 or more dead people on the train, not all Jews, far from it, but it was claimed that the Germans had murdered these people. Well, nothing of the sort had happened. The Germans had brought these people from who knows where, and the trains were strafed by American P-51s and P-39s, and hundreds were killed with 50 caliber machine gun fire, and that was what was found in many of these trains afterward.
Yikes.
It had nothing to do with any kind of deliberate extermination by transport or anything like that. It's just the fact that this Holocaust hoax can persist so long is a horrible, horrible warning for the future, especially for the near future. We see Russian propaganda today under Putin generating the same kinds of visions of fascists and Nazis and all kinds of horrible, horrible people in the Ukrainian new government there committing atrocities or getting ready to commit World War II type atrocities. It's just very, very sad that such propaganda does work, and it continues to this very day.
So what are your thoughts? I'm hearing an echo. I'm not sure how to get rid of that. It might be bouncing off from one of your mics. So why don't you move your mic a bit so maybe that echo will disappear.
All right. Anyway,
gentlemen, do either of you have any thoughts about what is going on in Ukraine that is relative to the Holocaust in addition to what Fritz just said?
Well, everything in our life is impacted by this phony Holocaust story. Of course, there were no 6 million killed in gas chambers disguised as shower rooms, yet it has impact on every level of our lives. As Fritz said, Putin has made Holocaust denial illegal now in Russia. This was passed, I believe, less than 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is terrible news. It's less... It might just be more... On the other hand, there's good news. In Australia, it looks like they're going to repeal the current Holocaust denial law. So this issue it negatively impacts every aspect of your life in ways you can't even imagine. This is the big lie we were warned about. They take you from when you're in kindergarten and you're brainwashed with this crazy, crazy, nightmarish nonsense. So as far as Ukraine, yes, it's concerning. What revisionists are doing, we're trying to prevent wars. We're trying to, of course, prevent World War III. One way to do that is to show the propaganda on both sides. Of course, there's American propaganda against Russia, a lot of Russian propaganda against the EU, et cetera. So we just try to show how propaganda is used to support war.
All right.
One of our main tasks.
Eric, you are involved in, looking at doing more projects. Could you talk to us about some of the things that you're going to be doing in the near future and how we might be able to help? And I noticed, too, on your blog that you are asking for people or... You're asking for... You're inviting people to join your growing team for your next ambitious project, and so you're looking for skilled multimedia artists. And you say, are you a talented CG artist? I don't know what that is. So tell us a little bit about what that is.
Well, we've put out two documentaries in the past 3 months. Our last documentary, we were able to film some interesting new footage at Treblinka. So for this documentary we're planning on next, it's actually going to be produced by Germar Rudolph. We are trying to make our own museum. We're trying to make basically a virtual revisionist museum. And this is going to be a revisionist Avatar or revisionist Star Wars. We're going to be using green screen, CGI. We're going to try to explain our cause the best way we can using modern technology. So we are making a virtual Holocaust hoax museum, you could say. So if you have 3D skills or Photoshop skills, any sort of multimedia graphics experience, we want you to help us out. It's going to be a really interesting project, and hopefully this will be something that can get through to these slow people, these brainwashed people who believe people like Elie Wiesel, who you mentioned at the top of the show. He claims they were dumping dump trucks full of babies into flaming pits of fire at the entrance to Auschwitz as he walked by. So we're going to present his claims in our museum and really challenge people's beliefs. So we've got an ambitious new project. We can use artists to help on this. Also, we could use some donations. The website's gaschamberhoax.com. And you could check out our last video, Treblinka Archaeology Hoax.
Which is fabulous. It is just fabulous. And you talk about, and you show this this woman who is supposed to be an archaeologist, and you point out, well, like the difference in her hands. I mean, they've taken things out of context and just put it together. And I really personally think that it was in response to your last video.
No, she's been planning this archaeological dig for 6 years. There's that number again. She's been working on this project for 6 years. So we're talking about this British, quote, archaeologist. Her name's Caroline Sturdy Coles. She has been involved with an alleged archaeology investigation of Treblinka. This is where it's claimed that 900,000 Jews were gassed. It depends on what the murder weapon is, on what decade it is. That's always changing. So they claim there were 900,000 Jews gassed, buried, then they were dug back up, cremated, and then reburied or had their remains scattered in this area. And for decades, revisionists have said that there's no evidence for this, and we've been actually clamoring for an actual archaeology dig at Treblinka, you could say, to exonerate the Germans of this stupid, exaggerated atrocity myth.
Sure.
So she actually got there, and she's doing a victory dance, claiming she proved 900,000 Jews were gassed. She claims she found a gas chamber. So what I did with this recent documentary she released, it's called Treblinka, Inside Hitler's Secret Death Camp. It was also released in America. It's called Treblinka, Hitler's Killing Machine. What I did was I just dissected the documentary using a lot of the great new information revisionists have provided throughout the years, and currently online they're really challenging these lies. A lot of great guys doing work out there. So basically, this Caroline Coles, she's 28 or 29. She's got red dyed hair. She just seems like I don't know. What would you call her attitude or general demeanor?
Well, she's very naive. She doesn't know the subject matter at all. One of the things that I was particularly interested in, and maybe I'm mistaken, but I had the impression they didn't make any claims at all about what the lethal gas came from. Did it come from diesel engines or gasoline engines? They left that completely out, which I find rather interesting, because the diesel allegation, or the diesel exhaust allegation, was a major part of my work over like 30 years. But now it's been pretty much conceded by a number of self-described Holocaust scholars that claim is completely ridiculous. And the alternative claim that it was gasoline engine exhaust is also pretty much out the window, because of the fact that gasoline engine exhaust produces reddish corpses because of the high levels of carbon monoxide. And if you had piles of dead bodies, naked dead bodies, as is claimed again and again and again and again, people would have seen lots and lots of reddish bright reddish corpses, and they would have remembered that for the rest of their lives. It's just inconceivable that they would not have remembered that.
So this archaeologist, she went to Treblinka because she did a aerial ground penetrating radar scan of the area, and what she found was that essentially the revisionists are correct. There are no massive burial pits in the area as alleged that can have the remains of 900,000. I'm hearing an echo.
We're hearing an echo. I think it's relative to the mics that you're using. If you move your mic closer, or even if you take the mic off, because sometimes the mic interferes with the microphone in your computer.
So she did a ground penetrating.
Now you're good.
So she did a ground penetrating radar scan of Treblinka. She found no evidence to support the massive pits that could have possibly been involved in this extermination campaign against 900,000 Jews. So what she did is she went down the road past the Treblinka 1 labor camp, past the gravel pit, and she dug in a known Christian cemetery. She dug up bones in this area, which possibly are even from another era. And she used these bones to claim that she found new, hidden mass graves. Of course, there's nothing really surprising about this at all. The entire area is covered with crosses marking the Christian graves for the Poles that died in this, were buried in this location. Another thing is she went looking for the remains of the gas chambers at Treblinka too, after asking for permission from Poland's chief rabbi, of course. The first two pits she dug, she didn't find anything of value. She actually found a fossilized shark's tooth, which brings up the question, if 900,000 Jews were buried there, they should be able to find more than 25 million teeth, human teeth, if the story is true. But of course, revisionists have proven that Treblinka II operated as a transit camp. So this is why they can't find these massive remains. And they're also impeding an actual real exhumation of the site. They're claiming it's against Jewish burial law.
Yeah, it's also part of the commission that was created in 1979 by Carter, of which Elie Wiesel was the chairperson. And they decided that it would be against the law to do any kind of digging or any kind of excavation in these so-called burial grounds because of the sanctity of the cemetery, and so it was disallowed. And so, of course, she was not able to actually do anything like that. That is why she had to go into the adjacent cemetery or where people were buried that weren't actually Jewish.
Yeah, so she's using bones of people that aren't even Jewish, that weren't even sent to Treblinka II, to prove we evil Holocaust deniers wrong, right?
Sure.
So another thing is her grand finale is she found remains of a building and some terracotta tiles. There's a marking on there that appears to be a six-pointed star. So she and her team claim that these are stars of David, and they were used on the floor of this gas chamber to make the Jews feel welcome as if they're in a safe place. NewObserverOnline.com and some other sources have pointed out that this tile is not the Star of David. It's really a European mark that was used on coats of arms and porcelain marks called the Pierced Mullet Star. and this star would have been attached to the floor and not visible at all. So this woman got worldwide publicity claiming these tiles prove that she found these gas chambers at Treblinka. Well, first of all, they're just tiles. They don't prove anything. They're just terracotta tiles. Revisionists claim that the building there is not used for any homicidal purposes and was likely a normal working shower room.
Exactly. Now, excuse me, somebody in the chat room posted a link to theskepticforum.com. And apparently there's quite a discussion about your film and about the transfers out of Treblinka 2. And they mentioned your film and produced by Friedrich Berg. And then they go about trying to discredit the film. So
Basically there's
go ahead.
There are seems to be Jewish people on this message board who believe every single Holocaust fantasy there is, and it's actually impossible to even debate with these people because they'll just twist your own words, misquote you, hear whatever they want, change whatever the
If I can jump in, I'll add something in that regard. I tried to join in that debate or discussion on the Skeptic Forum, and I got the runaround. Everything I did to try to get on that discussion forum was blocked. And,
You were absolutely blocked?
Oh, absolutely. And Michael Shermer is a guy I've challenged to debate on your show.
Yeah.
And he absolutely refuses. He said, who is this guy? You know, like why even bother answering my challenge? These are very strange, very dishonest people, basically, at the Skeptic Forum. I have no respect for them. They do not engage in meaningful debate when they have an excellent chance for such a debate. That's why they've blocked me and I think other people as well. Can I interject something that I think is very important?
Of course.
Eric says again and again, there was no evidence that 900,000 were buried at Treblinka. There's from gas chambers. There's no evidence that even one person who had been killed in a gas chamber was ever buried at Treblinka or at Auschwitz or anywhere else. There's no serious forensic medical evidence that even one person was ever gassed anywhere in the Third Reich. It's not just that it's not a matter of 900,000, which would leave open the possibility that there might be only 100,000 or 1,000.
Yeah.
It's zero. No one killed in gas chambers. Gas chambers were not used to murder anyone by the Germans. If the Germans wanted to kill somebody for some reason, they had plenty of other options, which are old, well-established options, like hanging and decapitation, shooting, and things like that. But
or just not
for them. Political reasons, this gas chamber mythology is very important to the Holocaust hoax because it paints the Germans as somehow evil Frankenstein-type monsters, and that is part of the racist nature of all of this propaganda. Holocaust propaganda is anti-German racism gone wild. And it is a disgrace. If it continues, the end result for the whole world will be disaster. I'm quite sure of that, because if you can get away with that kind of bunkum and get people to believe it, you can get them to believe anything imaginable.
I mean, there's people who still shed tears over Irene Zisblatt's story. I mean, we try our best, but I mean, mainly the only reason that they are believed or they have this sway over people is because they owned all the or most of the mass media in the past. But now, thanks to the internet, thanks to camera phones, smartphones, we can make our own documentaries. We can improve our production values, and we can challenge them and really get through to people, really change minds, really free minds. This lie, I think we're all sort of tired of it. Maybe we're starting to get some more courage because we realize the world, if this hoax continues, it's just going to lead to a third world war, essentially. So our goal is to educate people on this horrific atrocity myth. They are so brainwashed, it's just incredible.
Sure. Well, you brought up something, both of you brought up something about the other alternative ways that the Germans, if they were going to kill the Jews, could have done it. Certainly, they would not have put people on transports, on a train, and taken them anywhere. They would not have put an ID, a number, on their arm.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't have gone through all that trouble. Why tattoo a bunch of people if you're just going to end up putting them to death? Why not just shoot them where you find them?
Use a concentration camp. If you want to kill people, why bother with concentration camps?
Yeah, just shoot them where you find them. Don't take them anywhere. Just shoot them.
Exactly. Now, what the Holocaust hoax has proven is that basically Hitler's policy to expel the Jews during World War II was absolutely correct and reasonable. It's inconceivable that Jews could have been left in all the key cities of German-occupied Europe to carry on business as usual and whisper all kinds of lies in people's ears about how terrible the Nazis were and so forth. It's absolutely inconceivable. The expulsion and incarceration of the Jewish population as a whole was entirely reasonable under these circumstances. Now we're finding out that other countries were doing the same thing. I was nearly born in a concentration camp in the United States because my German-born parents were considered, not entirely enthusiastic about this war that America was pushing itself into. So, and in Russia, we now know that the Tartars, as one group, were expelled from their home territories because they weren't considered entirely loyal. Lots of countries do this during wartime, but because the Jews are special, we are crying about them in general. And it's absolutely appalling. The end result of that kind of nonsense will be a world war to protect Israel from the anger of people who have legitimate grievances against Israel. Anyway, basically, Hitler's policy toward the Jews was a very restrained policy. Atrocity propaganda against Germany and Hitler and the Nazis didn't just begin with World War II. It began in 1933 already. There were all kinds of stories in the American newspapers about Hitler being determined to outlaw religion, for example, and throw priests and pastors into concentration camps, as well as anybody else that they might not like for some silly reason or other. This kind of atrocity mongering is a plague on the human race. It's not ending, obviously. It's continuing, and Mr. Putin is doing the best to spread more new atrocity propaganda through RT TV and through any other outlets he can manage to control.
Indeed. Yeah, I have not. I know that there's a lot of people who think that Putin is a great guy. I just don't buy into that because he and Netanyahu have they teamed up together to honor the Red Army for all the wonderful things that the Red Army did. And all I can remember, all that I've written about in my upcoming book is that the Red Army raped every female from the age of 8 to 88 that they could find in Germany. They terrorized the women. They slaughtered everybody that they could, and the Americans allowed this because they backed off. They were stopped from going further, from liberating Berlin, and allowed the Red Army to live, and I use that word, in quotes, to liberate to liberate Berlin. I mean, they allowed this savagery. They allowed this brutality. And so for Putin to come forward and honor these savages is just egregious, in my opinion.
They were encouraged to be that brutal by their great Jewish propaganda minister, Ehrenberg.
Yes.
And, you know, he encouraged people to just kill Germans in every way and every day. And there was no shame in that or restraint in that kind of propaganda. And what they did ultimately was turn entire countries into concentration camps. East Germany was a concentration camp.
Sure.
When in the entire history of the world, prior to the great Soviet victory in Eastern Europe, did any nation, whether it was Hitler or Mussolini or Genghis Khan, ever turn an entire country into a concentration camp? Never happened before. But under the great heroes of World War II, the Soviet Union and Stalin, entire countries were turned into concentration camps. They imprisoned not just a few of their people, but their entire people. And there are people, I'm sorry to say this, I've met people like this in America. There are lots of them. They try to sort of excuse this sort of insanity by claiming the Soviets had to keep out spies and things like that. Well, that's not what happened at all. People revolted in Germany already in 1953 at great risk to their lives. You had the Hungarian Revolution eventually in 1956, and you had other revolutions. And the United States, you know what the United States did when those revolutions occurred? Nothing. Dwight D. Eisenhower, that great hero of World War II, did nothing to help the East Germans. He did nothing to help the Hungarians in 1956. And years later, when there were other opportunities for America to help uprisings against the Soviet Union, America did nothing. And we can be quite sure that America will do very little to resolve this mess in the Ukraine, except to make it worse.
Right. Well, the Ukraine has always been a troubled place. In fact, in 1932-33, it was a site of mass deliberate starvation. And in fact, Stalin admitted that they killed, 11 million? I've been editing my book or doing the last corrections on my book, and ran across that quote where he said, yeah, we 11 million, we admit it. We were trying to get collectivism going, and that was the way that we chose to do it. And they did. They went in, they seized food, they seized food production, and it was deliberate. And many of the people that lived in the Ukraine had settled there very, very early, and they were Volga Germans. And so even in the Ukraine, they were after the Germans. And in fact, after the revolutions in 1848, which were Marxist revolutions, Germany was a target then, and they were a target early on. And in Dresden, in September 11th and 12th in 1882, they had a meeting where they invited representatives from the European nations to come and talk about this Jewish issue, because every single nation in Europe had this issue where the Jews came in, and they wanted to they took over everything. They took over medicine. They took over the theater. They took over the media. They were the controlling voice in most of those nations. And Germany, the German leaders decided that they were going to have a meeting, and I believe that it was in Dresden, and I believe that in World War II, that the reason that the Allies targeted Dresden at the behest of the Jews, who were kind of orchestrating all the things behind the curtain, I believe that they targeted Dresden in retaliation and revenge for that early meeting.
Could be. Well, there is a little secret about Judaism. Judaism is racism. Anybody who knows anything about the Old Testament knows it is a racist document. And today, even though we are all conditioned and persuaded one way or another to be against racism, whether it's anti-black or anti-Native American or anti-whatever, Jewish racism is protected with the full military might of the United States of America. Israel is a racist state. Anybody who doesn't recognize that is ignorant and out of his mind, if not an out-and-out liar. So if anybody wants to understand what has been going on from well over 100 years, they have to recognize Judaism is racism. In all of the European countries, you had this racist movement, this racist ideology, protected as if it actually was some kind of a religion, while in reality it was a way for this Jewish minority to conspire against everyone else and enrich itself and make itself more and more powerful and more dominant. Communism was one expression of Jewish racism, with,
exactly,
of course, a lot of goyim dragged in to make it look like it might actually be something else for the benefit of humanity. In America, you see so many people who are totally brainwashed by Jewish propaganda. It's unbelievable, but it's there for everyone to see, and the religious institutions, the Christian churches, are just incredibly stupid for failing to recognize what's happening. America is becoming the great Jewish state.
We
should change the name from America to Jew-America, because that's what we are. There's no need for Israel anymore. The Jews have the United States totally in their pocket today, and we see that in countless actions and things that are going on. The crisis in Ukraine is to a great extent inspired by Jews, like Victoria Nuland, whose real name is Noodleman. Her husband is a guy named Kagan, who's one of the most extreme neoconservatives anywhere, who is ready to launch a war, I'm sure, against Iran at any moment to help protect Israel. It has nothing to do with protecting America. Iran is no threat to America under any circumstances.
I don't even think it's a threat to Israel.
I don't think it is either, but there's a possibility that Iran might fire a weapon of some sort in the direction of Israel, and therefore it deserves to be destroyed, given the insanity that has persuaded Hillary Clinton and other people in the U.S. government.
Sure, and I think Israel is just a satellite of the Jews in New York, and certainly we are under the Talmudic law. And have been under the Noahide law since 1991. And that's in the congressional record.
It probably goes back much earlier than that. The founding of the Federal Reserve.
Sure.
But anyway, we have this terrible problem in the Christian world. The Christian world feels somehow a loyalty to the Jews and Judaism. After all, Jesus Christ was Jewish, etc., etc. So we're kind of trapped with this Jewish propaganda, and it's going to take some really horrible events to get people to wake up, I'm afraid.
Sure. I'm still hearing my echo. Fritz, what kind of mic situation have you?
Well, I don't know. I'll check it out. But
and I can hear you doing a lot of wiggling around.
Okay, well, I do some wiggling around, I suppose. I'll try to restrain myself.
Still in your seat, students.
Okay, I'll try to do that.
Sometimes when I'm just listening to my guest, I'm at my desk and I just open my desk drawer and I pull out an emery board and I'll file my nails and whatnot, and the producer will say, I can hear, he'll Skype me and he'll say, I can hear you filing your nails. So my are tend to be very, very sensitive, and they pick up all of these noises. Anyway, so I'm not going to file my nails today. But you gentlemen do need to sit still in your seats, particularly you, Chris, because I think you're the one that's breathing.
I'm getting carried away here once in a while.
Oh, goodness. And sometimes just in your headset, if you just move your mic up and away from your mouth, put it, you know, like level with your nose or even higher, then sometimes it helps so that it's not right in front of your mouth.
I'll try to do that right now. Okay.
Are there any callers?
No, we don't have any callers, and let me just check my email, see if anybody has emailed a question or comment. No, they haven't. There have been some comments in the chat room, but not any that, let's see, one chatter some time back said, when are they going to open a museum of diamond defecators, which is, of course, reference to Irene Zitzblatt.
Well, the project we're working on, it's going to be a virtual revisionist museum. We're still working on the title, but what we're going to do is we're going to educate people, maybe even make people laugh. We're going to have rooms in our museum dedicated to these fraudsters such as Irene Zitzblatt, and we're going to explain to people, much like you'd see in a quote Holocaust museum, everything we have to teach on the subject in the simplest way possible. A lot of people have been making documentaries, myself included, but we haven't really decided to. Basically, we have to dumb down our presentation just a little bit. The people who at this point haven't found this information on their own are really, really brainwashed. So we're going to sort of make our next project approachable to even the most sensitive brainwashed American. It's going to be a tour through a virtual revisionist museum where we're going to have exhibits, and we're going to explain why this couldn't possibly have been a gas chamber. This is why. Here's the chemistry behind this. And we're also going to showcase some of these absurd tales, such as Irene Zitzblatt, of course. Yes.
Right. I think probably one of the things that people say the most when you're talking about the Holocaust, they will always bring up, well, I saw all the bodies. I saw all those pictures of bodies. Mm-hmm. And some of those bodies have been seen in movies, in Hollywood productions. And so people think, oh, yeah, I saw those bodies, not recognizing, well, of course, you saw the bodies in something that was composed and compiled by the people who want you to believe in this myth.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I think would be very productive is if you say, okay, just because you see a pile of dead bodies, let's go over the reasons why there might have been dead bodies and then talk about the Allied bombing and talk about even Eisenhower's death camps. And he did have at least 200 death camps or encampments. You can't even call them a camp, but encampments, fenced-in fields. Where there were thousands upon thousands of Germans who had recently been declassified and given a new status, so that the Allies, particularly the Americans, could incarcerate them and say, okay, a lot of the bodies that you saw were quite probably Germans. And of course, in some of the camps, like Buchenwald and some of the other camps, they had been with the transportation destroyed in Germany. There was a lot of typhus. There was a lot of sickness, a lot of starvation in the last couple of months before the war ended, and this was due to the Allied bombing. So, of course, you need to explain, okay, why, where did all these bodies come from, and why are they there? And Because
yes.
People believe in what they see.
Well, let me make one quick point about all of those photographs. None of the bodies are even seriously presented as a body of someone killed in a gas chamber.
Exactly.
In all of the photographs, when you look at the captions taken by the British Army or the American Army, they do not even claim that any of the bodies shown in those pictures is of someone who died from poison gas. But they know perfectly well when they show these pictures of dead bodies. They could have been died of measles or old age or lung cancer. They know by showing lots and lots of pictures like that, the viewer is taken in. He's disarmed. He feels sorry. Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
You could do the same thing here in the United States of America in almost any hospital if you photographed people who had just died from lung cancer or AIDS or any number of diseases, pneumonia from old age, and just take the pajamas off and photograph enough of them together and you'll have horrible, horrible photographs to make all kinds of propaganda about America right here. And you could say, it's happening in America right now. It's happening in America every day. You could, you know, brand America as a place of incredible horror and do it with some smidgen of rational evidence and get away with it probably because it would have some amount of truth to it, but you'd have no photographs anywhere of bodies from German camps that were of people who were dead from poison gas. Not one.
Right. There is a question from the chat room, and it's from a forum, so it's not necessarily the chatter's question. And the question from the forum is, why didn't the Nazis, and that's not his word, why didn't the Germans release the prisoners at the end of the war if there was a food shortage?
Well, the Red Cross was involved with both providing some extra rations and supplies to the camps. The Red Cross were inspecting these camps the entire time, including Auschwitz. So some of the camps were handed over to the Red Cross in the days before the collapse. You mentioned Elie Wiesel at the beginning of the show. He was given the choice to basically stay at Auschwitz-Birkenau or to march west. And he decided with his father from the hospital to go west with the Germans. So of course, we don't have to defend every German position to show that the claims of 6 million being gassed in gas chambers disguised as showers is a complete myth.
Exactly.
I can't. Of course, you know, at the time, even the Germans didn't have enough to eat in the surrounding villages and the surrounding areas. So I believe Fritz could get more specific if it's required on which camps were handed over to the Red Cross.
Well, Bergen-Belsen was turned over to the British voluntarily by the Germans. By Joseph Kramer and the Germans in charge. They wanted to turn it over much earlier than it actually was turned over, but the British kept demanding all kinds of special conditions like a corridor from which the Germans would retreat, which would have helped the British military situation and their continuing war against Germany. So there were all kinds of negotiations that were going on to turn over Jews and others to the Allies, but it was basically the Allies who were making more and more demands on the Germans.
Sure.
It wasn't an either-or type situation at all. The Germans would have been quite happy to turn over harmless Jewish civilians to the British or to the Americans at any time. I dare say even long before 1945, Polish Jews and many Jews in Poland were allowed to leave German-occupied Poland in 1940 and 1941 and came to the United States through special arrangements. But all of these arrangements were very difficult because there was a war going on. You couldn't just allow huge convoys of transport ships to take Jews from Poland to America. It just was not in the cards at that time.
Sure.
But as the war went on, it did happen. One of the arguments is that why didn't the Germans put the Jews in hospitals? Well, the hospitals were blown to smithereens by American and British bombing long before the end of the war.
Except for the Jewish hospital in Berlin. It wasn't touched.
That was totally untouched, and there were at least 800 Jews who spent the last days of the war safely in that hospital. And the hospital still exists today, by the way. You can search for it on Google, and I've done that, and I think I may have even shown a picture of it. It's still there today. Has no bomb damage whatsoever.
Exactly.
It's on the Oranienstrasse in the middle of Berlin. So.
Heinrich Himmler released relinquished Bergen-Belsen on April 11, 1945 to the British 11th Armored, and the British Armored Division liberated it on April 15th and found approximately 53,000 prisoners. Up to 35,000 inmates died of typhus in the first few months of 1945 before and after the liberation. So the Allies, just as many people died in the prison under the Allies when the Allies took jurisdiction over Bergen-Belsen as before the Germans relinquished it because of the disease. And the disease was caused by overcrowding because of the bombing and you mentioned before that they were moving prisoners from one camp to another to save them from the bombing. And so there wasn't, there was overcrowding at all.
Exactly. According to my numbers, which are a little different from yours, 18,000 died before in Bergen-Belsen, before the liberation, but 14,000 died afterwards. And
right.
Some of them died as many as 3 months later from the effects of typhus.
Right.
There is the impression, and Alfred Hitchcock, the very famous film director, he made this propaganda film of Bergen-Belsen, which this one American actor, his name escapes me now, and not an American actor, a British actor, made a very sarcastic kind of speech about how the Germans had ignored the needs of these wonderful people and how with just soap and water all their problems went away. Nonsense. If they had contracted typhus, that continued for a long time afterwards, and nearly as many died after the liberation by the British as before. But it was not a liberation in the sense we might think of, because it was the Germans at Bergen-Belsen who reached out to the British to turn the camp over to them voluntarily without any resistance from the German troops actually stationed at Bergen-Belsen. There was no resistance. The British were welcome to come in, provided that they didn't use that situation to some military advantage for the war, which was still continuing.
Exactly.
So the truth is very, very different. Very interesting, though, and I'll add this about the famous trial known as the Bergen-Belsen trial. The real atrocity claims that came out in the courtroom during the Bergen-Belsen trial had nothing to do with Bergen-Belsen. The real atrocity claims had everything to do with Auschwitz. The Jewish woman there, whose name escapes me for the moment, she made all kinds of outrageous claims about gassings, etc., at Auschwitz. There were no gassing claims regarding Bergen-Belsen at all. And the British prosecution teams and judges and so forth at the Bergen-Belsen trial, they couldn't get to Auschwitz because that was occupied by the Russians. But it was basically the accusations about Auschwitz that led to the hanging of the various defendants who were eventually hung as a result of the Bergen-Belsen trial. So there's this strange connection between Bergen-Belsen and Auschwitz. The bodies shown in Bergen-Belsen, which were real dead bodies, are used to make the Auschwitz horror story. It's kind of crazy, but that's the reality, and one has to sort of understand that to understand really how the hoax worked. This one woman whose name escapes me now, she lied her head off, and she could get away with it very easily because she had been to Auschwitz, and the prosecutors and judges, they couldn't get to Auschwitz even if they wanted to. So she was able to say any dirty
anything
thing she wanted to and sure get away with it, and she did.
Sure. Well, they started making these claims before the Soviets ever liberated Auschwitz, which they did on January 27, 1945. But in December of 1944, Ilya Ehrenberg was talking about how 6 million Jews were killed at Auschwitz. And yet, like I said, it wasn't even liberated yet. And yet they were making this claim.
Well, the 6 million number is a number with a history of its own, going back to the 19th century, whenever the Jews wanted to stress the horrors that were awaiting the Jews, either from pogroms under the Tsar or under whatever, they would bring out this 6 million magic number, like an old racehorse who couldn't run anymore, but at least you could make good propaganda with it. And the Jews all over the world would get upset, and oh, we have to do something. And the press would repeat this nonsense over and over.
Right.
So it has a reality that has nothing to do with German documents or statistics or population numbers or anything like that. It's a totally fantastic number that has no basis in reality whatsoever.
Right. What are your views? Either of you can answer, or both of you can answer. What are your views of David Cole?
Oh, wow. I don't know what to say. I tried to be rather sympathetic to him, but I think he has too many personal problems to deal with. I don't want to make any more comments about him. I think he helped cast some doubt on the established Holocaust legend.
Absolutely.
His visit to Auschwitz and the video he made there with some of the people, including the guides, as he went into the supposed gas chamber, was very, very useful. He showed just how crazy the propaganda is day to day in Auschwitz. You know, when I was there, I was told that as many as 20,000 Jews were killed per day. Well, it wasn't 20,000 Jews. It was 20,000 people were killed per day in Auschwitz and cremated within a day also. And the guy who told me this, he seemed like a normal Polish sane guy. He didn't seem like a total lunatic, but it was, you know, it was just an incredible story. And I'm afraid Poles in general have been as brainwashed with this propaganda as anyone, if not more so, except that they were brainwashed with the idea that it was Poles primarily who were being murdered in these Nazi gas chambers, and not Jews primarily, or even in the, or even that they were the majority of the victims. So it's a sad, horrible story. But anyway, getting back to David Cole, I wish him well. I can sympathize with him up to a point. I don't know enough about what he is really claiming today.
Sure.
He made a video recently with Michael Shermer in which he attacks Michael Shermer a lot, and I think rightly so. But I've heard also that there's an appendix to the video in which David Cole supposedly embraces the idea that there were gassings in some of the smaller camps to just have corpses for medical research or medical studies. And I find those claims...
That's ridiculous.
I find those claims to be ridiculous, yeah.
Sure.
But,
Eric,
you know, here you see what sometimes happens. I think this has happened with David Irving. You know, he may... What he actually believes and what he actually says is one thing, or are two different things. He seems to be willing to not go along with the entire Holocaust story, but to show that he's not a total loony like Eric and me, he will embrace a small part of the gassing story and show he thinks, I think, that he's at least open to evidence and is somewhat objective, at least.
Eric, what are your thoughts on David Cole?
The problem is that after going underground, he apparently had his own production company making Holocaust-promoting films. I haven't watched the films yet, so I'm trying to reserve total judgment, but I think it should be unacceptable for a revisionist to totally welcome back with open arms someone who decided to deliberately work for the industry that we are at war with, you could say. He apparently proudly made pro-Holocaust documentaries. He did not have to do that. He could have done any other job if he wanted to start a new life or something. But he basically, it seems, worked for the enemy. I'd have to watch these documentaries, but it seems like he's not really a complete revisionist now. He's just apparently confusing people with talks about experimental gassings for medical dissections. It's more lies, more silly, unsubstantiated propaganda. So I sympathize with him partially, but the fact that he was apparently making pro-Holocaust documentaries of his own free will while other people were being sent to jail or sitting in a jail cell is very troubling to me. I really don't understand what he's doing right now. Apparently he's making videos in front of a bed that's upturned, so it seems like he might have a drinking problem. So I don't know. He's definitely confusing a lot of revisionists, that's for sure.
Sure. Now, Ernst Zundel interviewed him, I think, I'm not sure the exact date, but he said some very interesting things and about Zionism, about the negative effects that it had on people, and about the bludgeoning of the population with the Holocaust. And those things are very true, very accurate, I think. But you have to wonder about his actions because he seems to be speaking out of both sides of his mouth.
Yeah, he's done great work in the past. But I think I don't, like Fritz pointed out, his current positions, it's just confusing a lot of revisionists. I don't know what he's doing myself, so.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like Fritz said, there's something similar to what David Irving is doing, trying to play both sides somehow. It's just confusing, and it's not true. So
he's trying to find like a middle road for himself, where he's not one extreme or the other, but he's somehow sort of in the middle. And Irving is doing that same thing to some extent. You know, he's not totally against Hitler, heaven forbid. He's maybe very much against Himmler, but he's not totally denying the Holocaust either. So he's find his own sort of safe, cowardly path, just like Mark Weber This another very despicable, cowardly creature that we've had in our ranks, so to speak, for many years. I want to add one thing. I've been very critical of Jews and Judaism, and I think, as I said, that Judaism is a form of racism. And I know that many Jews are very uncomfortable with this rather obvious connection to racism, and they actually are try in some ways to get away from it. They try to pretend that they're not racist when in reality they are to a great extent. For the Jews, the answer is to stop being Jewish. You know, just like people who are Christians don't have to be Christians all their lives. I'm not a Christian anymore. And the people who are Mormons for 20 years or more of their life, they can stop being Mormons. Stop being a Jew. That's the answer to Judaism. The problem with the Holocaust hoax is that it has kind of encouraged people, even with the smallest amount of Jewishness, to become totally Jewish in some way or other, becoming pro-Israel, pro-Zionist. This Holocaust hoax is a giant leap words in a way. You know, as time goes on, we abandon our racial prejudices, which many of us grew up with, including me. But Jews are going in the other direction, and the result will be a gross, horrible catastrophe for the entire world.
Sure. I can agree with you to an extent, Fritz, but when you're talking about a Jew, you're talking about either a religion, an ethnicity, or being an ally of Israel. So it depends on who they're talking to. It depends on who their audience is and their relationship with the religion, because you have the Hasidic Jews, and then you have people who are ethnic Jews. Maybe their father and mother came from Russia or something like that. So as far as abandoning Judaism, if you are Jewish by ethnicity, that's not something that you can easily do, and it's something that's genetic. It's inherent in people to act the way that they act simply because of their upbringing. So to stop being a Jew, that would be like, okay, I'm going to stop being Danish. I'm going to stop being English. I'm going to stop being German.
Well, people do that all the time. People stop being German. People stop being Danish. People come to America and they become Americans, indistinguishable from the vast majority of other Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So why
Jews don't do that? When Jews come to America, they congregate in their own little communities, not so much in America as they did in the ghettos of Europe, certainly. And I think they are becoming more of the population, but they still have these characteristics that are inherently Jewish. They still seem to rise to the top of any kind of a group that they're in, any kind of an organization that they're in. They have this propensity to want to lead and direct to their own benefit.
Well, there are exceptions to that. Mark Zuckerberg married a Chinese gal, so his children will not be Jewish. I'm sure he thought about that, and it didn't bother him too much. So in that respect, I give a pat on the back to Mark Zuckerberg and other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea of Jews marrying Jews is kind of stupid, because so many of them are rather ugly. You know, you just keep inbreeding in that little pool, genetic pool. You're going to have some real horrors emerging, as happens all the time. And Jews know this. I know they know this. And I know from some professors of mine that when they were in Israel, they got plenty of offers from Israeli women to mate and, you know, improve the genetic pool in Israel. You know, they know that. But Judaism is basically a kind of pseudo-racism, a kind of like you have among the Czechs in Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic today. They've fantasized some wonderful Czech or Israeli or Jewish identity that never really existed to begin with. But if you work at it long enough, you will develop some real genetic differences from neighboring peoples or other peoples around you in one way or another. You know, if you constantly only interbreed with white Episcopalians, after a while they're going to look like white Episcopalians, and they're going to look somewhat different from non-Episcopalians. So, you know, these are artificial races, and you can be sympathetic to some extent, but basically it's a formula for disaster ultimately, especially when the different groups have nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me just ask a question. Eric, do you have the program on in the background?
No.
Okay. I'm still trying to figure out where this echo is coming from, because I'm still experiencing it.
Okay,
we do have a caller. Let's see. I'm going to click on the microphone. Okay, and we'll see whether they have a question here. I don't know whether it might just be somebody that is listening in on their phone. So we'll see. I don't know. It's from a 415 number. Reconnecting. I'm not sure what's going on here. Like I say, I've never done this before. Well, I have. I just haven't taken a caller before. And this person doesn't seem to be picking up, even though. Okay, let's see. Let's see if this person has a question. Are you there, 415?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello. Okay, I did it.
Cool.
Thank you to the producer who I talked to in the background. Okay, do you have a question? Go ahead.
Yes, I do have a question for Eric Hunt. But first, I'd like to thank you for having Mr. Berg and Mr. Hunt on the air. I think they have some interesting views, and I want to thank Mr. Hunt for his latest film on. The Sturdy Collins supposed investigation of Treblink, and that was what my question was going to be about. And I think, first again, your film is very good, but do you know if Sturdy Collins research, her investigation seems to be following that of the Soviets in 1944 and the two Polish investigations of 1945 and 1946. And do you know if she mentioned or even knew about those earlier investigations? Because she seemed to be duplicating both the investigation and having the same result in reality. So that's a question for Mr. Hunt. And if the question precisely is, did Sturdy Collins know about the earlier, give any indication of knowing about the earlier three investigations?
Thanks very much. I have read some of her publications. I watched some presentations she gave to some students. I think she has written about these previous studies, but she's just such a poor academic. So, for instance, in one of her articles that she's writing about previous archaeological investigations of Treblinka, she mentions basically Richard Kriege, but attributes this investigation to David Irvin. So she just goes on Wikipedia or something. She gets her talking points from the mainstream sources, and she just accepts them. I think one of the most telling shots in the video was, you know, how she was driving a car in her documentary. She's driving a car as the announcer is telling what amounts to a ghost story by Soviet propaganda artist. I can't remember exactly right now his name. Vasily Grossman. So she's driving a car as the narrator is telling this ghost story about how the children were spreading the bones on this road to Treblinka, and he could almost hear their voices. So this woman is just, she's just allowing herself to be used to further her career in the larger hoax. So I think she has written about the previous investigations, how these amount to 900,000 Jews, I don't know. But do you have any other questions?
Well, I did have some questions. It seems amazing to me that she didn't look at the previous studies. The photographs that were taken by the Soviets and the survey done by the Poles in 1946 sort of disprove or contradict what a lot was on her TV special. So I hardly believe the Smithsonian Institute is producing or endorsing films that are so inaccurate.
Well, what she does contradicts not only that, but the laws of physics, the laws of science. It's just it's a farce when you really examine it. But of course, you have examined it. Many others have looked at this. It's just totally impossible for there to be these remains there. And hopefully we can just keep pointing these horrible lies out the best ways we can, using some of the modern technology we now have access to.
Regarding the Smithsonian actually, effective January 1st of 2006, Showtime, a private company, got an exclusive contract with the Smithsonian Institute, which is publicly funded at the tune of $800 million a year. The Smithsonian now is used only by Sumner Redstone, whose real name is Rothstein, who owns 70% of its voting stock in the company, in Viacom. And so basically, no one can use anything in the Smithsonian, even though it's publicly funded, except Rothstein's company, Redstone's company.
Well, they're inventing new lies, new stories all the time. I point out that, like you said, so now Channel 5 and the Smithsonian, so both Britain and American are in control of this one Jewish billionaire. They're putting out shows such as this Sturdy Coles documentary and also one called Hitler's 9/11, which claims that basically Hitler was planning a September 11th style attack that never happened. And of course, there's probably no evidence for this either. So they just invent more propaganda as the days go by.
Sure.
I'm sorry, but I think the caller has some question about Treblinka.
Well, my only other question was, or really a comment, thank you, because your film of Treblinka 1 buildings or the remains of the building show that, in fact, quite a bit of structural foundations and buildings were left standing in 1944. So that was very interesting to watch your video about that. Thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you. I know people like you have contributed and helped out in immeasurable ways to help bring the truth forward about this. There are many structures, and some of them are not identified on the as you walk around the area, Treblinka 1 and the gravel pit. So you would think an archaeologist would like to help identify these buildings positively and mark them. But no, she's digging up shark teeth next to symbolic memorials. So one thing I was shocked at Treblinka 1 was that there is a swimming pool right next to an infirmary. It's the only building in this Treblinka 1 direct area that was not labeled plainly. So I went there for 2 days. The first day, I didn't know what this structure was. It was only later that I found that this was marked on the map as a swimming pool. If you believe in the Orthodox Treblinka story, you have to believe that people were swimming next to this camp infirmary where about less than 2 miles away, people were being gassed by the train load. It's just so absurd in so many different ways. Fritz has pointed out the engineering aspects. In other respects, particularly Auschwitz, Germar Rudolf has pointed out the chemistry. People like you have pointed out the common sense aspects of the myth, and a lot of other people, such as throughout the ages, have pointed this out, and we have come to the belief that video production is the way to reach people. So we're just trying to sort of perfect our presentation to try to reach people, to try to plant the seed of doubt. Maybe in the past, some of our material has been too hard-edged, so we're going to try something different for the next time, just to reach the average person just like you. I mean, we all believed in this at one time, so we're trying to actually change some minds. I think people like Fritz, people like the caller, people like you, Deanna, have been involved with this, and it's all we can do. We have the truth on our side, so now let's use some of our skills to try to make some video presentations to try to really show how powerful our case of basically that the Germans are innocent of these horrendous claims of 6 million Jews being gassed in gas chambers disguised as showers. Just like soap and lampshade stories before them, it's time for the gas chamber myth to fall.
Exactly. All righty. 415, did you have another comment or question before we go on to the next caller?
Okay, well, I don't want to hog the and I'll take my comment on the air, but isn't the sites, Treblinka 1 and 2 and the quarry, aren't they actually close to surrounding villages? I mean, how remote is this place?
It's very close. You can walk on the outskirts of the camp, and there are other farms, other fields there. You can see in the 1944 satellite photos that some of the farms extended almost right on top of the existing camp area. There are people all around the surrounding areas that knew of Treblinka that came right up to the fences, apparently, and were bartering with people there. It was not top secret at all. In fact, at Treblinka 1, there are no remnants of any sort of real security fences of the kind that we're used to at Majdanek and Auschwitz and elsewhere. So it was not remote. And another interesting thing you can see on the satellite today is that there is an operational gravel quarry today right across from Treblinka 2. Less than 1 mile, it appears. There's an operational gravel quarry today that is performing very similar to the kinds of kind of work that was performed there in the when the Germans occupied the camp. So it was not secretive. It was not a top secret factory of death. It was a transit stop as well as a penal camp for to exploit the gravel quarry and the forest in the area.
Great. Alrighty, let's take another caller. Let's take.
Thanks very much, caller.
Let's take area code 951. Okay, 951. Welcome. You're on. Are you there? 951. Well, I'm not sure what happened to that caller. Somebody in the chat room said you could take a picture of a bunch of anorexic Hollywood actors without their makeup, and they would look just like Billy Wilder's actors in the Holo Hoax films.
Well, I mean, these people, they did suffer. Those are real people, but like you said, they're likely German prisoners. Especially some of these camps were almost solely for German and Polish prisoners, not Jewish prisoners. They clearly have signs of disease. Dysentery, typhus were rampaging through the camps. Supply lines were cut off. As Fritz pointed out, the Allies were bombing trains, and it was chaos at the end of World War II. It has nothing to do with gas chambers. We just want the truth. We know people suffered, were mistreated, didn't have enough to eat, didn't have proper medicine, but we want to live in the real world without fantasies about gas chambers disguised as shower rooms and the magical 6 million, and we want to explore the implications of how these atrocity lies are used to control and deceive. You pointed out the about Jews, just as Gentiles and particularly Germans and European people are taught to have guilt, the younger Jews are taught to hate. I could see it as I was walking around Treblinka. They're just involved in one of the most incredible cults that has ever been created. We are the target of their hate.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Hey. Yes, okay, 951.
That's Ben. How are you?
Fine. Are you the caller, 951? Do you have a question? I'm not sure, 951. Anyway, we have another question in the chat room. What did the guests think about the essay assignment given to eighth graders in Rialto, California, asking them to question the Holocaust myth?
Well, I guess that was it was an Islamic man that was a principal there, from what I remember. So it seems like in that community there are more. Obviously, they don't have the stigma in their native lands against speaking out about this. They don't believe it in their native lands. They know it's Zionist propaganda. So I believe it was a
19 days
Muslim principal or a superintendent who had students do this assignment. And, of course, it's a great assignment. Any debate class should have a similar assignment. Because we know our side would win if we had a free and open debate, or if we had a court case that was, judged by a jury of our peers. In this day and age, we have the ability to, we have all the information we need right now to show that these post-war and also pre-war claims about 6 million are just similar to the other atrocity propagandists throughout the years, from babies being bayoneted by Huns, all the way back through time, and to the 90s with the Kuwaiti incubator hoax. So we have what we need to get through to people now.
Sure. This is a question, it's a comment or a question for Fritz. It's really kind of a, well, anyway, It's from the regular chat room, my chat room. It says, Fritz, how do you get 20,000 Jews into a 14 by 20 foot gas chamber? And his answer is, it's easy, just open the door and toss in a gold coin.
Well, all right, well, I
think Sturdy Coles found some of those coins.
Yeah. Well, it's one more example of how ridiculous the story is, but one should not forget that as ridiculous as these claims are, what happens with people who are thoroughly brainwashed, they say, oh, yeah, well, 20,000 couldn't possibly have fit in there, but maybe the guy was simply exaggerating. Maybe it was only 200, okay? And then the person who hears that story or thinks about it in that particular way thinks, well, okay, it wasn't as bad as the Jewish propaganda claimed, but it was still terrible anyway, and those Nazis deserved to be exterminated and killed after the war and hung and all that. Unfortunately, that's the kind of averaging down that occurs. And you get people saying, well, even if one Jew had been killed in a gas chamber, it would have been terrible, or one innocent Jew had been killed in a gas chamber, it would have been terrible. Well, I'm inclined to agree, but there's not even one example, one credible instance of a Jew being killed in a gas chamber anywhere as far as the evidence that exists. Part of the problem is that people have been brainwashed in America and elsewhere by another hoax. And the hoax is one that was perpetrated by many state governments in the United States during the 1930s. And it was this idea that people could be killed in gas chambers rather quickly and painlessly. And that myth, that hoax, was the basis for the execution of hundreds and hundreds of convicted murderers in the United States until it gradually became obvious only during the 1990s that gas executions are not the quick, easy things that we were led to believe they were. Even Fred Lucher, our famous revisionist gas chamber expert, apparently believed that gas executions could be done quickly and painlessly if they were done properly with, of course, the skills of an expert like Fred Lucher. Fred Lucher never actually witnessed a gas chamber execution. Otherwise, I dare say he would have realized that gas chamber executions, even under the best of circumstances, are a horrible, horrible mess. They are not quick, easy, or painless. And today, fortunately, we have a great body of evidence about just how horrible and messy gas chamber executions are on the Internet, on YouTube videos. There are many videos about or made by former executioners at American prisons, usually the prison wardens, who clearly describe how slow and sometimes horrendous these executions were and are, even today with injections.
Exactly.
Lethal injections. It's not a quick, easy process at all. You're bound to shock the hell out of a lot of people who know anything about what is really going on, and rightly so. If you had been gassing thousands of people to death, you would have had such a huge, huge, endless mess. You would have had plenty of people who wouldn't have even been killed during those executions. People would survive and be groggy and furious and, injured and... It's just an insane allegation, but it continues because the bad guys, namely the Jews today, have this tremendous power to push this filthy racist propaganda at every opportunity into almost everyone in the world.
Exactly. We do have another caller. Let's take 304. Let me just, 304, are you there?
Yeah, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Yeah. I just have like a little observation. It was very interesting you mentioned the Holocaust assignment out in California. That was given national attention on, believe it or not, the Harry Shearer, you know, the comedian.
Mm-hmm.
He has a radio show, and I was listening to that, and he has a feature called Apologies of the Week, and it's the usual groveling, but he featured that, and he actually read out the entire assignment, and I thought, well, even though in the context it was given, it was humorous, it put into minds of certain people that, you know, what the assignment was, and probably started some people thinking, let's hope.
Indeed. Well, yes. Did you have another comment or a question?
No, I just wanted to put that out there, and I thought it was good news.
I think you're right. Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If I may interject something here.
Sure.
I'm not as familiar with the student answers as I should be, but I know one student, a young gal, answered one of her assignments by pointing out something that I've pointed out on my website, and I'm delighted to see something like an echo out there, that there are no autopsies to show that any of the bodies found in any German concentration camp was of someone who had died from poison gas or poison of any sort. There were well over 1,000 autopsies performed. I suspect many, many more, because the British doctors were there at Bergen-Belsen and elsewhere looking for precisely the kind of proof that one would normally expect in a murder investigation to show, yes, here the Nazis must have killed people with gas. But nothing like that has ever been found or been produced. So that young gal who may have been in that school, maybe not, maybe in another school, gets a pat on the back from me for having made that observation. There are no autopsies to show that even one person was ever killed in a gas chamber in any German concentration camp. And it should also be pointed out that if they had been gassings, the bodies would have been reddish in color, even with cyanide gas. Bodies turn red or sort of a reddish purple, and that is evident from the records we have of gas executions here in the United States. Sometimes the prisoner even turns red or purple as the viewers in the execution room watch the prisoner dying. We had a case just about a year or two ago here in Arizona where a man was sentenced in court for some crime, and he committed suicide in the courtroom by ingesting some cyanide pills.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And it was videoed, and I think Eric used that in one of his recent videos, and you could see the man turning red in front of everyone. So that is a sign of cyanide poisoning and also carbon monoxide poisoning. But none of the witnesses, except for one in the so-called Holocaust gassing stories, ever claimed that any of the corpses had a reddish coloring. They claimed blue and purple and yellow and black, but never red. So this is a major, major flaw in the Holocaust hoax, okay?
Indeed. Let me share a comment from the chat room. Gas chambers would be humane compared to starving to death like the Ukrainians or the Germans who were firebombed.
I agree completely. Well, this brings up something that's a little away from the Holocaust subject, but it's enormously important. In fact, it's more important than the Holocaust story, and I bring this up when I can, and I'll try to do it right here, that if Americans want to look at what evil occurred and what evil people really are like, all they have to do is look into any mirror. because the United States of America committed far worse atrocities than anything the Nazis are even accused of. The United States turned entire cities into incinerators in which we deliberately murdered as many people as we possibly could by literally roasting them to death, deliberately. That was American military strategy in World War II, to commit mass murder. That was the secret to American victory. All the battles in the Pacific and the generals, Eisenhower, Bradley, Patton, these were almost irrelevant to what was in reality our true strategy, which was mass murder of German civilians, Hungarian civilians, Italian civilians, and Japanese civilians. This is a very, very sick country, and we should be thankful and hopeful that there is no God out there, because if there were a God, and if it were anything like the arbiter of justice and punishment that we seem to believe in, he would have destroyed this country 1,000 times over. Gas chambers, if they had been used by the Nazis to murder Jews, would have been humane by comparison. Who would, if he had a choice, let himself be burned to death rather than be gassed to death? The answer is no one. No one. Burning people alive is the most excruciatingly horrible thing one can do to people, especially if they're civilians. There's no excuse for anything like that. And yet America was doing this on a massive scale against Japan and Germany in the last months of the war when there wasn't even any danger to America. If Americans really want to stamp out evil in the world and get revenge on evildoers, they can start right here in the United States of America. They can stop praising these criminals who ran America during World War II and admit finally that these people were monsters. People like General Curtis LeMay actually rose to chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And during the Kennedy administration, he was advocating pushing for a nuclear strike on Cuba to fry the Cubans. That was the word he used. He wanted to fry the Cubans. And John F. Kennedy, who to my mind was a great man, the greatest president we ever had, he made the comment that, commented that he wondered whether or not people like Curtis LeMay were even members of the human race, and he was right. But Curtis LeMay was the highest-ranking military leader in the United States during that period, okay? So there is something seriously wrong with America, and America doesn't even begin to deal with that. It doesn't even dare to criticize itself. This is a country, I'm sorry to say it, without a real conscience. They are very good at pointing the finger of indignation at the Nazis or the communists or whoever comes to mind at the moment, the Al-Qaeda and bad guys who bombed 9/11, but they never look at themselves critically. If they did, they might be truly shocked.
Well, I couldn't say it better myself. Eric, what are your thoughts on what Fritz just said?
Did we lose Eric?
I'm not sure.
Every day. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You can hear me?
Yep.
Oh, well, I mean, Fritz has been examining this issue for, I think, 30 years or more. Every day I get further along, I see new aspects of the hoax, how it's used to control people, how it's used to make them sheep, how it's used to destroy lives. This is the big lie we were warned about. It will take our entire lives to be truly free of it, even after educating people. But one way we're trying to we're really trying to bring some forward momentum to this truth movement, you could say. So our next project is we're going to create a virtual tour of our own museum. If we had a revisionist museum, what would be in our museum? So one thing we mentioned earlier was all of the mentions of 6 million going back to the 1800s. That will be in our museum. All the news articles mentioning 6 million Jews from 1800s to after the war. We're going to just have a complete sort of tutorial, frequently asked questions to try to get the uninitiated to look at our points, to see our half of the debate, you can say. And we're really excited about that. I'm working on that, trying to gather some team members. So if you know anyone who is good at 3D graphics or Photoshop, anything, you can really help us out with this. That would be awesome. So you can go to our website, gaschamberhoax.com. Since appearing on your show, I believe 3 months ago, we've been able to, Fritz and I and some other people who remain to stay anonymous, have really put in a lot of work and financial, how can I say this?
Donations?
Yeah, the generosity of people is just, it really moves me. People who are just trying to get the truth out any way they know how. This is all new territory for all of us. We are at the forefront of some sort of truth revolution. So it's all new territory, but we're going to try and advance our production values. We think this is the best way. We don't think people believed in this story by looking at the evidence, by looking at the science, by reading books. No. They saw films like Spielberg's nonsense. They saw The Boy with the Striped Pajamas. All these propaganda films that pull on the emotions. So we're going to combat them in their own home turf, you could say. They control the mainstream media. We're going to try to bring our presentations up to, you could say, professional quality. Our next video is going to be using some of the same technology the latest blockbuster films use. We're going to be using green screen, CGI. We're going to get to these people who we haven't gotten to yet for whatever reason. We're going to explain just how stupid this story about 6 million going into shower rooms really is. So if you can help with this project, it would be great. Our website's gaschamberhoax.com. We're really happy about all the progress we've made. You can see how, thanks to generous revisionists, we've been able to improve our production values as we go along, and our next project is just going to leap our cause as you could say. It's going to be a great leap forward for revisionist filmmaking. So we're really excited to get this done.
Excuse me. I think it is wonderful that Guillermo Rudolph has joined with you. And I think that that's what we need, is for people to join together. We're not going to do it with force. We're going to do it with education and information. And both of you have just been fabulous at getting information out. I'm just so honored to know both of you and to get your information. And you've both done marvelous work. And and Fritz, you for a very long time. You didn't wear out. You didn't say, "Well, I've done my shot. I've I've done my part. You just keep going, moving forward. And Eric, you're a young person with courage and determination. You've served jail time for daring to approach Elie Wiesel. I'm just honored to know both of you.
Well, thanks. I mean, it really helps for us to give support to each other, you know, in this Zog, you could say, the land of Zog. We are treated as the most horrible things you could imagine. So it really helps for us to help each other out, to give words of encouragement. We are doing the right thing. These people are being accused of the most horrendous, horrific things. It's a blood libel. It's bringing our world towards ruin. So there will never be any sort of freedom in the West or Europe or the world without going directly at this Death Star, this Holocaust story. So we are going at it. We need some help from some of the other guys, younger guys maybe, who prefer to be anonymous. Here's something you can do. You can help us with our museum project. It's really going to be awesome. We're going to have photorealistic graphics, and we're going to have a nice professional host to act as a tour guide through our revisionist museum. So, yeah, we're just hoping to get the word out on your program today. That if you like what we've been doing in the past, if you like our little filmmaking crew we've got, we're trying to grow. We're trying to really make our own media now, and we're not going to wait for anyone else to do it for us. So if you think you can help us, you have 3D skills, design skills, please contact us. Yes.
Right. I don't have any of those skills. I've never made a movie. I've never put anything up on YouTube. But I do research. I have those skills. So even if you just have research skills or any kind of skills that you could use, I think that
absolutely. That, I mean, we still need help. We could use your help. You'd be a great curator. We are serious about this. We have some images right now to show some concept art. So we need help, as much help as we can get. For instance, you, Deanna, you can help us design what exhibits we would want in our museum. We're going to create this, and maybe hopefully one day people can see our video project and realize, hey, maybe we could make a real-world museum. You know, the Scientologists I see have the Museum of Psychiatry or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we revisionists who have been in this struggle make our own real-world museum? I think we'd be surprised that it wouldn't take that much other than, of course, the funding. But I think it's something we need to actually do, and I hope this virtual museum is a step towards that.
Right.
Yeah.
As you were talking about it, I was thinking, wouldn't it be fun to have a photo or an image of people in the 1888 meeting talking about the Jewish problem in Europe in 1882, and then right next to it, the images of Dresden after it was bombed to show cause and effect kind of thing.
Yeah, we're going to tell the entire story that is actually illegal to do in many parts of the allegedly civilized world. We're going to show the whole story. Like Fritz said, you have to look at what America and the other allies have done. In particular, Fritz uses the word hoax, and the word hoax is appropriate. The Americans and essentially we are responsible for faking a gas chamber at Dachau. So we're going to have an exhibit about this, how American filmmaking crews created a film set essentially at Dachau to create the impression of gas chambers disguised as shower rooms. So we're really excited about the possibilities new technology has to basically give people a crash course on this gas chamber lie. Yeah, anyone, if you have any skills whatsoever or even just knowledge, please contact us. We want to make a real team here. We can divide people up into smaller teams. We're really excited about this, and we think it's going to be great for revisionism. As I said, Germar Rudolph is producing this, and it's going to be really, really something special and something I think we'd all be able to show our family and friends
exactly.
Without any, stigma.
Well, we have run out of time. The time has gone by very rapidly. I thank both of you gentlemen for all the efforts that you put forth and will continue to put forth. I just am honored to know you, and I support you completely. And if I can help, I will certainly do whatever I can. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. And take care, and we'll talk soon.
Yes, definitely. Thanks.
Thank you. And the websites, again, please visit those websites. And they are NaziGassing.com and GasChamberHoax.com. Please visit those two websites. Thank you so much for joining me today. Bye-bye.